Morning. Welcome to Mount Olive, summertime, and welcome to our series as we continue our series on faith, looking at some of the heroes of faith presented to us in Hebrews 11. Now, some of the heroes of faith that we're going to be going through in this series, and some we already went through last week, but some of these heroes of faith, we're going back a long time, and some of them up to 4,000 years back in time, and this is a really long time ago. And when you're going back 4,000 years, with some of the characters we're going to study and some of the things they did, I bet at some point you're going to say, come on, can we actually trust the story that we have? I mean, if it happened 4,000 years ago, I mean, we know how stories go. They kind of start this big, and then they kind of grow, and they get this big, and can we really trust the stories that we have, or has it all just become myth, and has the story changed for us? And probably out of the list of characters and stories that we're going to study in Hebrews 11, the one that we're going to study today probably is the most disputed and hotly contested stories of all of them. And today, we're going to go back, you know, some 4,000 years or more. We're going to go back to the story of Noah. Now, I would guess you've heard of Noah and the Ark. If you grew up in church and, you know, spent time in Sunday school, probably this is one of the first stories you remember, or maybe even the first story that was told to you. And if you're new to church and new to faith and you're just kind of starting out, probably the story of Noah and the Ark is one that you've come across. Possibly even in 2014, you watched the movie Noah, you know, with Russell Crowe and so on. And I just want to say, they got some things right and a lot of things not right. And so if your whole idea of who Noah is and who God is from that story, I would encourage you, go to Genesis and read the story anew, or maybe for the first time. They did get some things right, though. What they got right is that the earth was wicked, and God decided to hit the reset button, and he did it with a flood, and God saved Noah and his family and two animals of every kind. And the rest of what they said, you probably have to question a little bit, but they got that part right. But you know, maybe you have your own questions. I would guess you have questions, even if you grew up in the church as I did and grew up believing. But at some point, you know, you hear this story. I mean, God floods the whole earth, and there's just questions that start to arise. Like, did God really flood the whole earth? I mean, is there enough water to cover the whole earth? Did he flood the entire earth or just part of the earth? Can we take the story literally? Is it supposed to be taken figuratively? And there's kind of questions, you know, did the story change over time? And one of the big questions people often have is a bit of a theological question is how can a loving God destroy all those innocent animals and all those innocent people? And these are really, really big questions, and I just want to say I don't really want to get into answering those questions because we don't have time this morning, because I could give you a pat answer in 60 seconds, and then you would leave saying that just doesn't really cover it for me. And the point of Hebrews 11, verse 7, that is about Noah and the series, it's about faith. And so although those are really good questions and questions we should ponder and wrestle through ourselves, I don't want to get bogged down by those questions, because the point of this series and the point of Hebrews 11 is not to answer every question. Is this literal? Can you believe it? Is the story true? Is there enough water? How can a loving God be reconciled with this flood? All these things, although those are good things, Hebrews 11 doesn't deal with it because he's looking specifically at faith. And that's what I want to do as well. And so the one thing I want to say regarding can we believe the story to be true is this. 2,000 years ago, there was a man who walked the earth, Jesus, and he predicted his own death and resurrection and pulled it all off. And so I take the story of Noah's and the flood and the ark, I take it seriously because Jesus took it seriously. And if you're a follower of Jesus, it makes sense to take serious what he took serious. And on debatable matters, I just go with the guy who, you know, claimed his own death and resurrection and pulled it off. So that's all I'm going to say regarding that. And then in regards to how can a loving God, you know, kill these innocent people, that's a big question. Again, I don't want to get bogged down by that. Although, as we're going to see in the story, the people weren't really all that innocent. Okay, so on to the story. We're going to start not in Hebrews 11, verse 7, which is the passage we're dealing with. We're going to read the story as it's depicted, presented to us in Genesis chapter 6, verse 5. So we'll start in verse 5. So if you have your Bibles, go to Genesis chapter 6. It's the first book in the Bible. As you're finding that, I'll just share kind of an interesting story regarding Noah. We have a son named Noah, and when he was two to three years old, he could talk and understand things already, and he's not much older than that now, but when he was two and three, he was convinced that the story of Noah was actually about him. True story. We would read the story of Noah for devotions, family devotions. He's got two older siblings and one younger. But we would read the story of Noah, and he would always just kind of sit back and not cross his arms because he's too young to think of that. But we'd share about the ark and the animals. He'd be like, yeah, that's how it happened. That's true. He would authenticate. He would prove that it's true because he had experienced it. He was Noah. And his older siblings, who were smarter than him, because they knew the story before he was born, they knew he wasn't the real Noah. So they'd try and tell him. They'd be like, Noah, it's a different person we're reading. They'd be like, no, that's my ark. And those are my animals, and that's me. That's Noah. My name's Noah. That's Noah. That's me. So he would just say that, and it was quite funny. Actually, my wife got a picture, a T-shirt for him that is a picture of an ark. I don't know if you can see it, and it says, "Need an ark? I know a guy," and that's Noah. So, but you know, before we get, you probably found Genesis 6, but I'll just say this one thing: before we get on, Noah, my son Noah, actually had some things right about the story of Noah. He thought, I am Noah. And I think what Hebrews 11 verse 7 is saying is this. Here's some pictures, some portraits of what faith looks like from the past. And we call them heroes of faith, which sometimes makes us feel like, well, I could never be them. But Hebrews 11, the writer of Hebrews writes this as an encouragement to say, the faith he had, you can have. It's not beyond your grasp. Noah can be you, and you can be Noah in that kind of faith sense. Anyways, Genesis chapter 6, let's dive in. The story of Noah, not my son. The Lord saw how great the wickedness of the human race had become on the earth, and that every inclination of the thoughts of the human heart was evil, was only evil all the time. Now get this, that every inclination of the thoughts of the human heart was only evil all the time. So humanity had become so deteriorated that every inclination, not even the things they did, just the inclination of their heart was only evil. So this was not we have to get out of our heads, this was not an innocent race. This was not, you know, they're just good people trying to make an honest living. These were people that were, every inclination of their heart and the thoughts of their heart was only evil all the time. You know, when you read Genesis, and maybe you've heard this before, but Genesis 1 and 2, God creates the universe, he creates the earth, he puts humans on it, and he created all good. At the end of chapter 1, he says it's all good, and it's so good. And then in chapter 3, humanity sins, and death and sin enter the world, and so what God had created as so good gets corrupted, so much so by chapter 4, we heard about Abel last week, Cain and Abel. By chapter 4, the sons of the first two people, Adam and Eve, the sons, Cain ends up killing evil out of jealousy and envy, and so we just see this deteriorate, and then by chapter 6, we read every inclination of the thoughts of the human heart was only evil all the time. So you can see the earth, what God had created as so good, has just become deteriorated and has been destroyed. So, because of this, the Lord God regretted that he had made human beings on the earth, and his heart was deeply troubled. And one of the things I wrestled as I read this verse is, does God have regrets? I mean, God is perfect. He only does what's right. He only does what's good. So what does it mean that the Lord regretted this? I think another translation of that word regretted, or another way to say that, is God was sorry that he had made human beings on the earth. And here's what he was sorry about. It's not because he made a mistake. He was sorry on behalf of humanity. He regretted on our behalf what we had made of ourselves. His regret was not that, shoot, because this is how we think of regret. Oh man, I did something. I wish I wouldn't have done that because I see now that was a mistake. When God regretted that he had made human beings, it wasn't like, shoot, what have I done? I kind of messed this all up. It wasn't that he did something wrong. He was regretting on our behalf because he said, listen, I have such a beautiful, awesome future for you. And you've destroyed it. Sin has destroyed it. And so on behalf of humanity, the error is not that God made humanity. The error is in what humanity has made of itself. So what do you do when the what you have currently is so far off from the original? What do you do? Now, we have all sorts of creative people in this building. Some of you are painters, and some maybe work with pottery, and some, you know, write songs, and some of you are construction workers, and you build stuff, and some are welders, and you manufacture things, and you build stuff. What do you do when you have a dream of something? Maybe it's a song you're going to write, or a painting you're going to paint, or something you're going to weld together, and you think, I had this dream and this vision for it, and it was going to be so good, and then as you're going, all of a sudden it's like, this is not what I had hoped for it to be. In the case of Noah and the story of God and his interactions with humanity, it's not even that you messed it up. You were painting and your two-year-old kid came and just messed it all up. Or you were welding and someone came and just, you know, kind of messed it up here and there. At some point you say, I'm going to start over. I can't even redeem this, right? So we're just going to kind of chuck that out and we're going to start all over again. And in a sense, I mean, it sounds kind of maybe crass, but this is kind of what God does. So the Lord said, I will wipe from the face of the earth the human race I have created, and with them the animals, the birds, and the creatures that move along the ground. For I regret that I have made. I'm sorry for what they have become. But here's the deal. Before, you know, God crumples up the world and throws it into the, you know, divine garbage bin or however that would work, something happens. And something kind of interrupts the story. But Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. When everything was kind of just a mess and God's like, I just got to kind of start over, Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. It's kind of like if you had your painting and your two-year-old is kind of messed it all up, but there's the corner piece is, it's still like, you know, redeemable. I can use that. I could kind of take out that, the rest of it, and I could start new with this part. Or you're welding, it's like, this piece is still good. I could start the whole structure again from here. And God says, instead of wiping it all clean, I'm going to start over with Noah. And here's the account of Noah and his family. Now, Noah was a righteous man, blameless among the people of his time. And he walked faithfully with God. Noah had three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Now, Noah was a righteous and blameless man. Now, how was Noah righteous and blameless? Because the law didn't come for like hundreds of years later. Jesus hadn't showed up on the earth yet. There was no like, do this and don't. I mean, what kind of law did they have? We don't know. But whatever it was, and Hebrews 11:7 is going to define what he means by righteous and blameless. But also Genesis, later we're going to see in verse 21 or 22 how he defines, what does it mean to be righteous and blameless for Noah? We'll get to that in a little bit. So as the story goes, now the earth was corrupt. God's word tells us, the earth was corrupt in God's sight and was full of violence. God saw how corrupt the earth had become, for all the peoples on the earth had corrupted their ways. So God said to Noah, I'm going to put an end to all people, for the earth is filled with violence because of the people, because of them. And I'm surely going to destroy both them and the earth. So do this, make yourself an ark. An ark was a big boat to float in. Now I'm going to bring floodwaters on the earth. As far as we know, this had never happened. There had never been any kind of flood. I'm going to bring floodwaters on the earth to destroy all life under the heavens. Every creature that has breath of life in it, everything on the earth will perish. But I will, get this, God says, I will establish my covenant with you, and you will enter the ark, you and your sons and your wife and your sons' wives with you. You are to bring the ark into the ark, two of all living creatures, male and female, to keep them alive with you, two of every kind of bird, of every kind of animal, and of every kind of creature that moves along the ground will come to you to be kept alive. You are to take every kind of food that is to be eaten and store it away as food for you and for them. And here's what I want you to notice just about that kind of whole story. Notice the covenant or contract, the agreement God makes with Noah. It's one way. It wasn't like, Noah, you do this and I'll do this. He just said, Noah, I found favor with you and I'm going to make an agreement with you. and based on my mercy and my compassion and who I am and my goodness, not because of what you've done, but because of who I am, I'm going to make a covenant with you. He says, I'm going to save you. But he says, I want you to build an ark. Simply build an ark. And here's how Genesis defines righteous and blameless life of Noah in verse 22. Noah simply did everything just as God had commanded him. Noah did everything God had commanded him. Blamelessness and righteousness worked out itself for Noah through one word, obedience. Simple, hard, difficult obedience. You know, most of us don't like that word, obedience. And here's, I think, a few reasons why we don't like the word obedience as humans. And why, you know, Noah doing everything just as God had commanded him was so different than the entire rest of the world. And obedience is still very different than the majority. And the reason we don't like obedience, I think, is because obedience is for dependence, right? Children are supposed to be obedient because they're dependent on someone above them. And we don't like the word obedience because we're not children. And as we grow older and we grow wiser, we don't want to be obedient to anyone. We want others to be obedient to us. And the words I hear in my house from 4 and 5 year olds, adults think and live their lives by all the time. And it's this: you're not the boss of me, right? I'm the boss of me because I'm independent. And Noah, as he lived his life, he did something very different than the entire rest of the world, all of humanity. He decided, instead of being independent, I'm going to be dependent on God. And he simply just did everything God commanded him to do. Another word that's really tied closely to obedience that we also don't like is the word submission. Submission. Submit yourselves, to put yourself under a higher authority. And we want to be the highest authority. All of us do. It's in all of us. And yet Noah decided, I'm going to walk in a different direction. And when the world was becoming more violent and more immoral and more independent of God, Noah decided, I'm going to walk God's way. And he walked in a different direction, and it meant he ended up in a different destination as well. Here's how this writer of Hebrews, thousands of years after Noah, summarizes the faith of Noah. Hebrews 11, verse 7. Jump over that way. It's near the end of your Bibles. Hebrews 11, 7, he says this: by faith, when warned Noah, by faith Noah, when warned about things not yet seen. Remember the definition of faith according to the writer of Hebrews in verse 1. He said, faith is confidence in what we hope for, an assurance of what we don't yet see. And so by faith, because it takes faith to see something you can't see, something that isn't physically in front of you, by faith, Noah, when warned about things not yet seen, and it took a significant amount of faith, because here's what's true. We struggle to have faith to believe that the story happened after it happened. Imagine how much faith it took for Noah to believe the flood was coming before it had ever come. It was a significant amount of faith. He couldn't see it. It was beyond him. The earth had never been flooded before. What are the chances? People had never really had to pay for all the wrong they were doing. Why would God show up now? By faith, when warned about things yet to come that had never come before in the history of the universe. By faith, when warned about things yet to come, in holy fear, built an ark to save his family. In holy fear, faith, his faith connected to his holy fear. Now, holy fear, really that just means he understood who God was and he trusted his word enough to say, I better do something about that. In holy fear. Now, most of the time we hear the word fear and we say, I'm not a slave to fear. I'm a child of God. Fear is bad, but here's the deal. There's a good fear. All of us need good fear in our life because good fear, we call it healthy fear, it keeps you alive, right? I mean, the reason we don't walk off a cliff or get too close where it's dangerous and then fall accidentally is why? Because of a healthy fear. It's why you're the age you are. Or you would have been dead a long time ago if you didn't have a healthy fear. The reason we don't drink, you know, the stuff in that bottle that's got the skull on it and we don't drink that is because of a healthy fear of poison. Healthy fear keeps us alive. And here's the deal. A healthy fear kept Noah alive. By faith, when warned about things that hadn't shown up yet, in holy fear, he built an ark. And then something interesting, the writer says, by his faith, he condemned the world. Now, what does that mean? And how does faith condemn the world? What does this have to do? Now, there's a few ways we could understand this. You know, maybe because of his faith in God and other people's faithlessness, it was like now their faithlessness was shown because it was compared to something, and his faith condemned the world. Maybe his faith condemned the world because we know that he warned the world. Peter tells us that. He warned the world about the coming destruction. So he had faith for something that had never yet been seen or realized. And that faith condemned the world. But I think in another way, Noah's faith condemned the world in this way. I don't know if you've ever noticed, but notice how you can feel condemned when you're around really good people, even when they don't say anything to condemn you. It's just like their really good life just kind of makes you feel like, man, I should be doing that too. And it's almost like you kind of feel condemned. I think this happens all the time. Other people's goodness, when we're not maybe doing that much goodness, it kind of makes us feel like a little condemned. You know, think about this. If in the food we eat, in our diet, if you're always eating really unhealthy and then the person beside you is always eating healthy, at some point you're like, maybe I should be doing what they're doing. Because I kind of feel bad about what I'm doing now. And if they wouldn't have been there, you'd just been felt fine, right? Or working out, you know, you're sitting on the couch and your wife is exercising. You think, maybe I should get off the couch at some point. I don't know. I just feel guilty. When they're not in the room, I feel fine. What is that? Why is that? And, you know, by his faith, which his faith, we know, worked out to being blameless and righteous, there was this kind of condemning thing that was going on. And I think if we live by faith, our faith will make others uncomfortable in that kind of like, maybe something's not right with me as well. I remember when I was 13 or 14 years old, me and my friends were hanging out and they offered me, I think they had stolen or probably stolen because they were underage, stolen some cigarettes. And so they offered me some cigarettes and they said, hey, do you want to smoke these? Now, just so you know, smoking a cigarette isn't the worst thing you can do. But, you know, as a 14-year-old, I kind of wanted to put good stuff in my body and not bad. And it was illegal. So I said no. And it was interesting how my friends responded. These were my best friends. When I said no, they grabbed me. They threw me up against the wall. And they said, you better smoke the cigarette or we're going to beat you up. And I remember thinking, well, that's strange. Why does it matter that I'm not doing what they're doing? But here's the deal. Me not doing them, doing what they were doing, made them feel very uncomfortable. It's almost like Noah, by his faith, he condemned the world. It almost showed, you know, that it made them feel uncomfortable. Now, just before you think that, you know, Elvin's this righteous guy that never does anything wrong, I have to tell you, when I was 10, I tried smoking. I rolled up some paper and put some grass, dried grass, or maybe some weeds, in that, and I tried smoke, and then I coughed, and I was like, that's a bad thing. But the point of the story isn't, well, look how righteous I am. The point is that there can be this uncomfortable. When we live by faith, it makes those who don't a little uncomfortable. And in Noah's case, it was, you know, it was his faith that was lived out in obedience that condemned the world. Here's the thing about great faith as we see in Noah, because we're kind of seeing how does faith play out in different nuances in our lives. And here's what we see in Noah. Great faith actually has little to do with feeling and a whole lot to do with obedience. Great faith and great spirituality have little to do with feeling and a great deal to do with obedience. And this is bad news for some of us and most of us, because here's the deal. A feeling is way easier than obedience, right? And we often, in our faith, we seek a feeling. It's just, I want to feel confident that God's going to come through in this situation. And often when we say, I just don't have a lot of faith, what we mean is, I don't feel like God's going to do it. It's all just built on feeling. And sometimes, like, I feel close to God, and I got this feeling, and I raise my hands in worship, which isn't bad. But, you know, we seek a feeling. And yet great faith in Noah's life didn't have anything to do with feeling. We never talk about his feelings. We talk about the fact that he did everything just as God commanded him. It was obedience. And great faith has a whole lot more to do with obedience than it has to do with how we feel. It goes on to say, and because of his faith, and he became heir of the righteousness that is in keeping with faith. Do you know that Noah was the very first person in the entire scriptures that is called righteous? The very first person. Adam and Eve weren't called righteous. Abel, the very first person to be called righteous was Noah. And later, a few hundred years later, number of years later, we read the story of Abraham. And it would be said of Abraham that he believed God and was credited with righteousness before there was ever a law, before there was ever a you do this and that. By faith, they were considered righteous. And Paul would come along later, 2,000 years after Abraham, even after Jesus, and he would say, listen, we are still declared righteous by faith. Obviously, our faith has grown in what we understand and what we know. We know of Jesus. We know of his death on the cross, his blood that was spilled on our behalf for our sin to make us right with God, and our faith in him. But we are still declared righteous by faith. It's always been that way. And Noah was the first. As the writer of Hebrews would write, one verse before the verse of Noah. Chapter 11, verse 6, he says, listen, without faith, it's impossible to please God. You can't get close to him. You can't receive him. Anyone who comes to him, which anyone who receives God, who has a relationship with God, must believe that he exists, and he rewards those who earnestly seek him. Faith. Those who believe that he exists. God, you are for real. And I believe you're for real enough to know that you reward those who seek you. That there's a reckoning, a day of reckoning coming, and I'm going to live in obedience to you. You know, great faith has little to do with our feeling and a whole lot to do, a whole lot to do with our obedience. You know, all Noah knew, and we know so much more. I mean, we know Jesus. We have the entirety of Scripture. Scripture hadn't been written yet. All Noah knew is God had told him, a flood is coming. And he said, I believe you. I believe you. He lived it out in obedience. You know, here's what we see about Noah's faith as well as we define faith for Noah is this. Faith in God is upstream to the flow of the world. Faith in God is upstream. Obedience to God is upstream to the flow of the world. And we see this in Noah. The world was going one direction. It was a direction away from God, a direction away from acknowledging him, a direction away from obedience to God. And they had become violent, and morality was nowhere to be found. And Noah lived in a different direction. And here's what you need to know about direction. Direction determines destination. And when you go a different direction than someone else, you're going to end up in a different destination. And Noah also ended up in a different destination. And as followers of Jesus, if you're contemplating following Jesus, you need to understand that following Jesus means, putting your faith in him means, I'm going to live in a new direction. Not the old pattern of me or the pattern of the world. I'm going to live in the pattern of God. And it leads in a different direction, which also means it leads to a different destination than the world as well. It's upstream. It's upstream. And here's the thing you know about upstream. Upstream is harder than downstream. You're paddling your canoe. It's a lot faster if you go downstream. A lot less energy to go downstream. Upstream is going to take a lot more work and a lot more intentionality, and it's going to be a lot harder. And I think this was true of Noah. As Noah lived upstream, I think it was difficult. As he was building that ark, and you know, there'd never been a flood. There was no body of water near. What is the point of this big boat? And we don't know how long it took Noah to build the ark. You know, some scholars say maybe it was like 100 years, and some are like, that's crazy. It's way less. I'm going to go on record as saying it was more than a day. So somewhere between a day and 100 years, we'll say, it took Noah to build the ark. And I imagine along that time, going upstream got a little difficult. When the entire world was going one direction and he said, I'm going to go another direction, it became a challenge. It would have been so much easier just to do it the way of the world. And yet he lived in a different direction. And it eventually, get this, for Noah, it eventually paid off, didn't it? It saved him. It saved him. It saved his family. It resulted in his salvation. You know, the Christian life is the same today. Salvation itself is this way. You know, we must put our faith in Jesus and go his direction. By faith in Jesus, we are saved. As Paul said to the Ephesians, it is by grace you have been saved through faith. And as we place our faith in Jesus and what he's done, we also are saved. But here's the thing about salvation. You can't see it fully yet, can you? You can't see it. We live by faith, believing that the power that raised Christ from the dead because he's been raised is one day going to raise this old body when it passes on. It's going to raise me from the dead. We believe that his atoning death that covers over our sin by faith in him, we believe that at judgment day we won't be condemned, that we'll have eternity. And so salvation works this way too. And eventually it paid off for Noah. And salvation is this way as well. It's upstream. Following Jesus, walking the way of God, is upstream. So here's the deal. If you're going in the direction of the world, your destination will be the same as the world. In Noah's case, it was beneficial to go a new direction. And I want to encourage you, if you haven't placed your faith in God, to consider going a new direction. Consider what Jesus has done. Consider who he claimed to be. Consider his resurrection. And think about placing your life in his direction, in his hands. It changes our destination. You know, so many of us, we're so tempted to define our faith by just a feeling. I just feel like God's close, and I feel like this, and I want to have that feeling. But here's what can happen if we just make faith about feeling and not about obedience. You know, we can come to church and have our Bible study and gain knowledge, and maybe even have a Bible degree, you know, from a Christian college, and maybe we have a great feeling, and we go on, you know, Facebook and social media, and we talk about, you know, how great God is in our faith, and then back behind the scenes, our life is just a mess, and we live two lifestyles, one that we speak and one that we live, and it's not in obedience. And I think more of us need to be careful about what we say about faith and what we think about God, and be more concerned about how we're living in the background. And let our life speak. And as we have opportunity, speak. But if it's two ways, people will find it out. And Noah understood it's about obedience. It's about obedience. Upstream. It's upstream to the flow of the world. It's not about a feeling. You know, sometimes we think, I just want to know what God's will is for my life. Okay, I want to be obedient. I just need to know what God's will is, and once I know God's will, then I'll be obedient. And I think when we say that, we're actually hiding behind the fact that we already know what God wills. We just want these specific plans, and we hide behind wanting the will of God for specific plans when God says, listen, my will for you is to live upstream. My will is for you is to live differently than the world, to put your faith in me, to trust me. In fact, Romans 12:2 says this about the will of God. It says this: you want to know God's will? Let me tell you first what his will is. Do not conform to the pattern of this world. Don't just go the way of the world, go upstream. Be transformed by the renewing of your mind, and as you live in obedience, then you will know what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. You know, faith is upstream. And great faith has little to do with our feeling and a lot to do with our obedience. You know, God is way more concerned about how you treat your wife, even the one you divorced, how you treat your spouse, even the one that you divorced, than he is about the career path you choose. God is more concerned about how you're living in purity then, you know, what college you're going to go to next year. God is more concerned about your money management and your anger and how you love others, showing your love to God, than if you're a plumber or an electrician or making subs. God cares about the specific, you know, plans of your life. But God's will is for us, like Noah, is to walk faithfully with God, to live upstream to the ways of the world. You know, faith, it fears God above all else. Faith, it plays itself out in action, going a new direction. So if great faith is shown in living upstream, I want to ask you, how's your faith? And what's one thing, if you wanted to become a person of greater faith this week, what's one thing that you need to be doing this week to say, I trust in God. I trust what his word says, and I'm going to do it even if it's not working out for me right now. What would it look like for you to put your faith in God and live upstream? Noah was a man of great faith. We can't be called righteous apart from faith. Trusting God exists, and he rewards those who earnestly seek him. May we follow in his footsteps of great faith, more than a feeling, but obedience. Let's bow to pray. Father, thank you for your word. And in some ways, this message is a bit of a challenge for us because it's upstream to what we want to hear. The story of Noah is challenging because his life was upstream to the natural flow of the world. And it's hard to hear messages that say, man, maybe there's some things I need to work on in my life. Maybe there's a new direction I need to go in this area of my life. And God, I pray for those that are here this morning that maybe are just starting a journey of faith, or maybe they don't even know. God, would you encourage them, encourage us to consider you. You are true. You have proven that throughout history. And that means we can trust you for what's in the future, what we don't yet see. We can put our faith in you. God, would you help us to put our faith in you? And for those of us that walk with you and say, we believe you cognitively, God, may it play out in our lives, as it did for Noah, with obedience, doing everything you've commanded for us. I pray these things in your name, Jesus. Amen.